Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Luis Reyes Rojas. I'm from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And today I will talk about the digital mapping of soil organic carbon in central Chile. First of all, we need to explain what it means, the digital soil mapping concept. It's the creation of spatial information through an input that it could be legacy soil data, or we could collect a new sample. All this input is processed, and we create different prediction models. And all these prediction models is how we relate other variables to the soil property that we want to predict, to produce, at the end, an output that are prediction maps. And depending of the process that we use, we have also the uncertainty. And the good thing is all this information could be updated. The model or the concept relies in the Scorpion model. That Scorpion model is a variation of the soil forming factors model of Jenny that we include here other variables and other concepts, but not with the goal to explain how the soil is formed. Is how we could predict in landscape, in this case, a one soil property. Oh, sorry. And it means that we have... this is a pointer? Yeah. Yes. A set of soil information that we could intersect with different other covariates, that it could be other soil properties, climate, organisms, relief, biomaterial age, and all that information. We build a model that is how we relate these variables and have two outputs that are the quantitative prediction of the soil property that we want and the estimation of the error. So, in terms of materials and methods, our study area, it was central Chile. This is an image of the pedon distribution, and it was extracted the DAM from 90 meters. And why we use that area of Chile? Mainly is because it's the area with more density of points. And it's because it's this area related with all the agricultural valleys, and the extreme regions, that is here the Atacama Desert and here Patagonia, are extreme regions, and all the studies are local and next to populated places. So we don't have all the variability to use that information. So this is picture of all the pedon data that was divided in training data and test data. In 75 and 25% respectively, and it's a total of 485 pedons and more than 2,000 horizons. So to deal with the difference that we have, each pedon have different kind of horizon and different number, and also each horizon have different thickness. If we want to compare in all the other with the other soils, we use splines, equal spline area, because it's a good way to represent the whole variability of, in this case, of the data. Probably it will be not compared with other places, but it's the best way to have a continuous function. Have values of any depth, and for instance, we use the six depths that are related with the global soil map specifications. And to have a reference here, there is a map of the soil order that represents Chile. In this case, the northern part of the central area is dominated by alfisols and molisols. And here in the south, the presence of andisols is really important. It's almost one third of the whole area. The other input that we used was 47 variables derived from the digital elevation model, the rainfall and temperature from the World Climate Database, and also maps that are from Chile, in this case for the geology. We are talking here about geology age, then kind of rocks, and this is rock types, land use, and this in the second map, and here is the soil suborder map that is more detailed, and this was that we use, and this is a summary of all the variables that we apply for our model. So the model evaluation, we use four models, which in the first group it would be the all related with linear regressions, that is the MLR, multilinear regression, and rule-based regression, that's Q-RIS. So for them, and deal with the parsimony of the model, the DAM derivatives, we use the parsimony using the lasso analysis, and all that results, we include the other environmental cover is not related with relief. In case of the rule-based regression, have as an output a variable importance. So we use that variable importance as the parsimony of the model. The other two groups are the stochastic analysis. In this case, are regression trees and random forest. For both of them, we use, in this case, the parsimony through the variable importance. But in random forest, including one package of R that had that kind of emphasis that made a good selection of the creating more forest and eliminating the variables that are redundant. So in terms of results, here are three splines of the patterns that we collect, or in this case we rescue from the legacy data. And the first one is a classical decay of carbon with depth. And it's a contrast with the other one that here there is a lack of data in one of that horizons. But with the spline function, we could predict a possible value for carbon at that depth. And in the bottom graph, it means soil that have a huge variability, and the importance of these splines is that we could harmonize the depth and express all the depth diversity, including different genesis, or in this case discontinuities, or buried horizons, that sometimes the value of soil organic carbon increase with depth. These are the results. That's in, I don't know why it's not here the units, but they are in gram per kilogram of the splines that we extract. And with a mean value of 35 gram per kilogram, and it's decreasing with depth for the whole data set. That's the unit. The results of the model performance with the test data, the 25% of the panel, shows that the random forest is the best predictor for 5 of the 6 depths, except the first one, that the regression tree was the best predictor. However, QRIS shows that it has the lowest performance for almost all the depths, and in the bottom group of horizons or thickness, all of the models have a really bad performance except random forest. So these are the preliminary stock maps derived from the random forest, and we could see that there is an increase of carbon while we are going closer to the area of andesols. Also, this area has more precipitation and less temperature. That kind of arrangement is the same for the other two other depths. And the emphasis is that if we analyze the variable importance, all of them that the suborder is the most important. Soil suborder, second is rainfall, and third one is temperature. If we go into the other depths, we could see that the something happened. Yeah. There is a decrease of carbon that we show in the data set, and the higher values are related also with the zone with our randisols. In this case, the variable importance follow the same order than the previous one, except for the bottom depth that is related more with relief variables than in this case temperature and rainfall or soil suborder. If we want to see of all the variables to build a model for the best model for each depth, how common they are, we could see that soil suborder, rainfall and temperature are present in all the models for the whole depth. And land use, even though don't have too much importance in all the models, is selected in every time by the as a predictor. And the secondary variables that could be used for predict carbon are related more with relief. So, as a conclusion, the splines are able to model the soil organic carbon variation by depth. The random forest was the best model to predict soil organic carbon. The most common variables to predict SOC in all the depths were soil order, rainfall, temperature, and land use. And the soil order, rainfall, and temperature are the most important variables for prediction of carbon at the five of the six depths. So, thank you to the funding that is from Chile, the CONICET, and that's it. Thank you.
I have to say,
we have time for one or two questions.
Yes. Wonderful presentation. I enjoyed that. I am curious with your soil taxonomy. Did you try grape roots or families or anything like that?
Honestly, we try just with soil order and suborder. But for not to be redundant, I have a good, how can you say, distribution.
Sure.
We prefer in this case soil suborder because have an integration too with the climate and other property that we see that it could be a huge in implicance in Chile, because the Chile is really easy to follow how is the range of temperature and rainfall. So we thought that it was a good match.
I just thought maybe family might work as well.
Yes, at the back.
Yeah, I got both a comment and a question, I suppose. First of all, I also very much enjoyed the presentation, especially to see some comprehensive aerial generation of modeling and assessment. That's really neat. And I appreciate the fact that you're giving fairly limited information over such a wide area, because your rough area is something on the order of 100 kilometers by 1,000 kilometers in area.
Yes.
I mean, that's very crude. It's something like that. We have 500 observation points. So it's a tough job. Mm-hmm. The question is this. First of all, and this is an endemic issue for all this kind of modeling, we know from experience, and it's confirmed time and again, that a 90-meter PM is too coarse. If you have nothing, it's great. It's better than nothing. But most of those aerial associations and the breakout of soil pattern seems to happen at a much finer detail. So it's something in the order of 5 meter PM to the tree. I realize that that's a logistical limitation. But the point is that if you're dealing with very coarse PM, you're going to get relationships, some tight, others that are not. But it really doesn't tell you what's on the ground until you get to a much finer resolution. And I think that that's a modeling challenge.
Yeah, but also using a coarse resolution is helpful to see or to have a instead of test all the models in higher resolution, it could be useful to see, okay, we need just these variables or this will be more important, because for the 50 54 variables. The whole models are using 20, so that's a huge difference in terms of data that you use to predict. I think both are related.
We'll have to hold questions there. Thank you very much.
Thanks.